You are listening to the Green Lantern Spotlight Podcast, episode 48 for March 2010. And be sure and tune in next podcast for very special guest Alan Moore.
Today's rendition of GL Spotlight, the premier locale for all your Green Lantern-related news, rumors, and reviews. Today we bring you our thoughts on the topic of Green Lantern outside its general stomping grounds. I'm, of course, your host, Frankie Mateo. And joining me today are Brandon West, the co-webmaster of the website, speedstersite.proboards.com. We also have Musard, our generally likable member. And we also have Eric, who is hardened by his immense knowledge of comic book culture. How you guys
hardened.
Doing?
I like that you said hardened. Hi.
Hi.
Waka waka.
And today, pretty much, we're going to be discussing our take on pretty much Green Lantern and other medias outside of his normal books, such as Green Lantern, Green Lantern Corps. So we're going to dive into the fact that he's in other books, such as Justice League, the miniseries Cry for Justice, Justice Society of America, Brave and the Bold, and that short-lived Wednesday Comics when it came out early last year and then finished sometime this year, am I right?
It was only 12 weeks.
It was only 12 weeks. Yeah.
Was it 12 weeks?
In September, I believe.
Yeah.
And in September. So basically, we're going to discuss our take on how we perceive Green Lantern had been portrayed or, I guess, treated in the Justice League of America books, given the fact that there were two Green Lanterns running around in that book during the time, such as Hal Jordan and John Stewart. Seeing that most of the time the book is actually supposed to represent both characters as equal partners, giving both of them at least access to certain story arcs, do we feel that the characters were representative well, or was it lacking?
You mean in terms of their partnership or the balance of the two characters
in
the title?
In terms of their partnership, in terms of how the characters themselves were divided up in story arcs.
I feel like I can only remember two times ever seeing them act like partners, and that was in Final Crisis and in the very beginning of the Brave and the Bold arc, where they split up. So both times they act like partners is just to kind of let Jon Stewart get out of the story so Hal can do what he's supposed to do. But no, I feel like you don't see them doing partner stuff at all.
I don't remember seeing Hal in Justice League for any of the 42 issues. until Robinson took over, I don't remember Hal being there. Maybe
we used to poke his head in when we had Brad Meltzer.
Yeah. Still, I don't remember. And that being said, John wasn't around for that long either. When McDuffie wrote him, he wasn't that interesting. I guess he was just a mouthpiece at that point. They both sucked in this in this book. It wasn't much of a partnership. It wasn't much of an individual effort. I don't know why you couldn't use the Green Lantern in Justice League. Seems like an idea that's been around for a while.
I know there was conflict about, and Dwayne McDuffie talked about this a lot openly, that there's conflict about who can and can't be used in the Green Lantern series, the Justice League series, and he said he was tied down a lot using Hawkgirl and Red Arrow because nobody cared about them. So every time he tried to bring this character in, they'd be like, no, he's doing this month, and he's like, can I use her? He's like, nope, also not her. I think the famous scene, whatever, is when Hawkgirl dies in Final Crisis.
And then DC was that 36, I believe?
Yeah, and then decided it didn't happen, so Roy is actually at her funeral, and I think he's talking about breaking up with her. And he's dressed like him and his friend just teleport somewhere wearing funeral outfits, standing in it by a gravesite to have a conversation. So Yeah, obviously.
It's a very isolated spot. Most people always go to graveyards to talk about their personal problems or breakups.
I like to dump all my girlfriends in a graveyard because I always be like, yo, it could be worse. Yeah.
Mew, I could be killing you.
Mew,
I could murder you.
Mew, what have you thought about the, you know, the Justice League rendition of Green Lantern?
Well, going back as far as the current run does, I like the idea of seeing Hal and the team initially when we got to see Hal, and then when John came over, I thought, you know, we haven't seen much of John, so I'd like to see some of him, but honestly, he wasn't on the team that much, and that quickly ended as McDuffie left and Lee Wen became the fill-in guy.
Yeah.
And after that, we really haven't seen John, so I'm kind of looking forward to the new Green Lantern run because I want to see some more John, damn it. He's like that guy like you see in the back of the room. He's like just standing there coolly, and it's like, hey, I should go talk to that guy one of these days. He seems cool.
Or he could be a murderous psychopath.
Exactly. That's half the fun. It's a surprise.
you get a mixed bag. To be honest, I reading the Justice League at the time when I was doing so, it's always been a weird. It was weird at first to have two Green Lanterns, and it also being openly stated in one of the issues saying, you know what, we're sector partners. We don't want to be on infringing on each other's toes. I don't want you to think of you as the black guy, John Stewart, and we're gonna evenly share what we have. But to be honest, half the time I usually see Hal in the book. He doesn't do anything. Don't get me wrong. The problem is they barely use the Green Lantern in the Justice League issues during some courses of the run, especially during Duffy's run when he had to again forcibly not use certain characters at given points of times. And when John Stewart was actually used, he barely did anything at all, or said one or two pieces, and then he disappeared for like untold given the number of times. And it's normally led for Satana, Retornado, or whoever the hell, Vixen, whoever the hell else was on that team.
Right.
And pretty much, we're like the second stringers. I mean, this Justice League, in all honesty, was Justice League Detroit. And it put off a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's all second. I don't actually necessarily think. I think any team book can be really entertaining. I mean, only by accident, you know, because you kind of have an excuse to write everybody archetypally, and you have if that's how you pronounce it. You have kind of have an excuse to like write everybody as like you know succinctly as you can, and to only hit big moments and to not be tied down by continuity and stuff. So I kind of feel like when people say like, oh man, he only used the Detroit guys, it's like, well, that's kind of his bad for not really making them interesting, but. With McDuffie, I understand it's more of a scheduling thing. Like, he had no time to write these characters and no real way to think them out. And he's also writing on Justice League, which is a title that's, you know, not necessarily in any danger of being canceled. Though I am a little confused as to why DC would make a point to say, well, we only use these crap characters because, for some reason, it's not like people are buying Justice League because they think they're going to get all the good characters. Oh, wait, yes, it is. So I don't understand what their deal is. Why not just let the characters be a little more free? So I do appreciate what's going on now. I mean, I think that's kind of should be talked about because I kind of like the idea that the Justice League, at least for the next month, the forerunners for this Justice League are Mon-El, the replacement Superman, Dick Grayson, the replacement Batman, and Donna Troy, the once replacement Wonder Woman. I think that's kind of cool. They have hinted on before the idea of, like, you know, Cyborg being part of the Justice League and
Star Sapphire.
Star Sapphire was part of
it. Well, Starfire.
What did I say? Starfire. Oh, yeah. Starfire, and also in the... way back in the day, the Obsidian Age, the idea of Batman's backup league and how Dick was leading it, and it was always like, yeah, Dick should eventually lead the Justice League one day. I think that's kind of a cool idea, especially considering that, you know, they have an excuse for it. Superman's off of Earth, Batman's wherever Batman is, and Wonder Woman's, I mean, I guess she's still kind of hanging out. But I think the problem. Wonder Woman's not on the team because it's not as interesting to have her, and that's why I think at least the couple issues we've seen so far, Hal on the team, is kind of awkward because he's spending a lot of time being like, man, I'm the old guy on the team, and the readers are being like, yeah, you are. Why would you point that out to us? Because we kind of just think you're the old guy on the team, you know? I mean, it feels like he's the crotchety old guy in the corner that you kind of invite to the barbecue because – he was hanging out at work looking sad, but you're like, I really shouldn't have invited him because he looks like he's like looking up my skirt or something, you know?
It's weird to think about that only because I don't think Hal is the general old guy on the team. Ollie fills that role a lot better than he does. And the problem is...
Hal looks the part.
Yeah, you know, Ollie looks the part. Hal, on the other hand, just looks like the awkward, socially awkward guy on the team. He's like, I don't really know what I'm doing here. I'm just here because apparently someone got my number and invited me. And it could easily have been John Stewart, but apparently he's off-world, conveniently enough, so I'm the only Green Lantern in the sector.
Well, you know, as much as we might not like Kongorilla or Congo Bill or whatever he's called now, and
Starman.
and Michael Starman, whatever he is. As much as we might not like them, that's really, the Justice League should kind of be about that, because it's kind of like the X-Men, a little less like the X-Men than whatever, but you should be able to feature these kind of, like, not really as well-known characters in order to be, you know, like, hey, you know, it's everybody loves Batman, you're buying it for Batman, and you love Green Lantern, you're buying it for Green Lantern, but here's this one character you never kind of heard of. I think it's hard to justify a guy who's just got gorilla strength and is gold being on the team with everybody, but that's...
That you team mascot.
Yeah, yes, yeah, yeah.
Every team needs a mascot.
Yeah, yeah, he could be the secretary like Wonder Woman used to be for the Justice Society. Yeah.
But it actually makes a good idea to showcase certain characters that you want to get popular with already popular characters.
Oh, yeah.
Help them a little bit.
Exactly. And that's interesting. And obviously, I like the idea of Congo Bill and Starman dating, if that's quite what's going on.
I would hope.
Dating an alien, and that's kind of awesome. I mean, that's the kind of stuff you really should be seeing more of in comics, you know. But and again, I think everybody can kind of agree that the James Robinson, his legacy so far in the Justice League has been spotty at best, so.
Yeah, going into his Cry for Justice run, which is supposed to lead us into our new Justice League storylines.
Let me just say quick about the Cry for Justice thing, even before getting to Hal's character in it. I don't understand what the point of the series was, because we've had so many comic books that have been about heroes approaching the dark side, and, you know, every single crossover that Geoff Johns has done in the past couple of years has always been about heroes getting back to their more simple, basic, you know, roots. And Sinestro Core War was obviously about Sinestro trying to corrupt the GL, and the idea being that Coast City kind of turned that around. Infinite Crisis was this idea of, you know, the DC Universe being so harsh and nasty that these old superheroes had to come in, and they ended up getting corrupted just because shitty everything is, but let's try to bring it back to a more golden age. And yet we're still getting a series where Hal Jordan is like, I think we should start torturing people, and and what was the logic in the series? Like, we're going to investigate crimes before they happen. It's like, but you do that, you know, like, and you spend most of the series following around one crime and solving one crime, so you really weren't doing anything differently.
I think the point was it was supposed to be ongoing, but then he got a bunch of stuff where, like, oh, you have to do this, it has to be a mini, you're going to write that book, but you have to set it up in this way, and he just basically forced all the stuff onto him to change the basic premise of the story that got some of the crap he didn't like.
Well, from what I understand, it was going to be a part of the Justice League run, I think, and then they decided to make it a mini because they thought it was going to be an interesting storyline. And they didn't want to interrupt whatever was going on in the Justice League run, and then it became what it is. But I believe it was always supposed to be that exact story. I just think that's what's wrong with it. There's nothing interesting about the story. I mean, Ali has lost it before. I mean, if we buy the Kevin Smith resurrection story, he was resurrected before he became a really hardcore asshole with the Mike Rell stuff. He was resurrected when he was still like a 70s kind of like radical, quote-unquote. So this Ollie's first time of doing this sort of thing. But I mean, I don't know. In Judd Winnick's run, it was always about how far Ollie would go, and Ollie's always been kind of morally questionable. So the big twist that he killed Prometheus, it's kind of like, I mean, the only thing that's interesting about that is that you get closure on the Prometheus storyline. But I mean, I don't know. My biggest problem with it is how willingly so many heroes were willing to kind of torture people, and how really, I mean, considering he's
led the charge,
he's the most official cop-like character, the most officially bound by rules and stuff, and. Considering you can really turn into, like, oh, he's been pushed so hard by Sinestro and what's been going on with him that he would become this type of guy. I don't know if it really justifies him being as sadistic and kind of, you know, evil as he was in the series, you know, and how there's no consequences.
He's slowly becoming Parallax again.
I mean, yeah, I mean, what kind of, you know...
Or he slowly uses as an excuse that he was using Parallax as an excuse.
Okay, yeah, lying. Yeah, with me, I was an asshole.
Well, Wes, what do you think of Cry for Justice, even though I know it burned your eyes and retinas for the fact that you actually read the thing?
Did anybody actually like it?
Let's hear Wes' take on it before we give our
I certainly did not like it. I bought the first two issues. I said, I'm going to drop the series, but curiosity got the best of me. So I picked up the final three. I skipped issue three. So I didn't miss much.
Missed that one?
I hate it. Yeah, I did. I hated this series, not because of their actions or the torturing thing or the fact that every 10 years another group of superheroes have to be vengeful and be aggressive with their – yeah. Not because of all that, just because it was written so poorly, and especially the final two issues, Scott Clark came on and completely – took me out of the story with his terrible art. Eric said it was no purpose. I think it was worse than that. It was just so scrambled. It was no direction at all. If you wanted to make Ali more Mike Grillish, then you should have did that in his own book without bringing in all these characters. Because you started out with one thing, with this little band of characters going off on a mission, coming together and crying for justice. And it ended up this
perfect paraphrase.
This big Justice League fight. Well, no, excuse me. There was no fight. It was Prometheus smacking everybody down with these insane ideals and bullets. Like, but it was like a
identity crisis.
It was a shell. Yeah, it was Deathstroke all over again. It was like a shell of what we saw in the 90s of Prometheus. And to choose him as a villain just really struck a nerve because he was gone. There was no reason to bring him back. And this it just awful. Felt just like the death of Leon, Roy Harper's daughter.
Yeah.
It just, the choosing of Prometheus just seemed so pointless. It's like, let me kill off the daughter. Why? Because it'll give Green Arrow even more of a reason to be pissed off other than the fact that his entire city just crashed.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I didn't
think, apparently it's one of those, now it's personal moments.
Yeah. Well, whatever. It was already personal. Because, like,
yes, but apparently James Robbins is asked, like, you know what? Now it has become personal. I killed a little girl.
And it's a retread of whatever happened after Infinite Crisis where Deathstroke went around wrecking everybody's city and how after when Ollie became the mayor, he, like, had a personal stake about kicking Deathstroke's ass, you know? And so it was just kind of a reuse of that. Well, I think...
Well, wait, I still haven't finished Wes's little rant here, so I want to hear that.
Engage.
I guess wrapping up, the Prometheus thing really bugs me because they had that one shot in 2009, the start of the year, Faces of Evil one shot. They brought Prometheus back, and it's like, okay, what are you going to do with the character? Is he going to get a new helmet? Because, I mean, I think they would see that shit coming this time. And then to follow it up, almost a year later, to follow that one shot up, just for him to sit back and blow up a city? Like, that's something that crappy electrocutioner kid could have did. Like, I would rather see him murder somebody, like, cold-hearted murder, than for him to blow up Star City. That has no emotional impact on me, even as a fan of Green Arrow.
Well, he disarmed Red Arrow.
And we didn't even get to see that.
Like, well, I mean, besides that, it's just unnecessary, kind of like... You know, it felt like the 90s all over again, you know? It felt like we're getting Cyborg on.
I have much respect for the 90s, actually.
Do you really?
The mullets, like we're getting arms.
Yeah, we're getting grim and gritty heroes who aren't afraid to kill. We're getting cyborg arms. We're getting murdered girlfriends and murdered daughters, you know, and every woman that could possibly be abused is being abused. Because I'm not forgetting his Blackest Night storyline either, where Dr. Light is actually assaulting Dr. Light and, you know, he's completely destroying her and sexually assaulting her. And, you know, what turns around is, stay away from my babies! It's like, how limiting can you get when you're talking about a female character, especially the problematic character of Dr. Light anyway, who's a character who, you know, is a woman, one of the only prominent women superhero in the DC universe, and she names herself after a rapist, like, you know, one of the only other known rapists in the DC universe, but whatever. I mean, I think that's, you know, whatever.
She was around
before she was, since the crisis
he was a rapist, right?
Yeah, no, yeah.
Okay.
I wanted to say, pretty much for my Cry for Justice experience, even though how limited it was, I actually read most of this stuff, and I didn't know, I pretty much read the first three, I believe, and know what happened at the end. But most of that story had been one of these painstaking experiences, because the way it starts off is how basically going, Rena Kid vengeance, seek vengeance, mainly for the fact that Bruce is dead and Martian Manhunter is also dead. And it's weird to follow the story, especially since you're sort of confused as to at what point and what point does the story take place. And it's also weird that Prometheus is chosen, seeing that Prometheus, in fact, is supposed to be Wrath, or equal to Wrath, the Wrath character, which is the reverse Batman.
So the
Wraith.
Yeah, Wraith. I'm saying Wraith.
Right.
And to have it be Hal Jordan saying, we're doing this for vengeance because Batman's dead and all these other heroes are dead, and to actually have the main villain be the equal to the reverse Batman, and in some way have him go, I'm going to blow up a city, cause unspeakable totals of damage, and pretty much cause all these heroes to go, like, you know what, we're going to torture, maim, go Guantanamo Bay on people.
Yeah, you know, I was going to ask Mew a question really quick. Mew, since you always seem to know the answer to this kind of thing, why didn't the heroes just, when they found out that the traps were specifically key to them, why didn't they just switch cities?
That's a very good question. I think they were too busy crying for justice to think.
That's the greatest answer I've heard all night.
It's like, Superman, why don't you take my city? No, wait, justice! Sorry, I forget I said anything. I didn't realize you were already on the phone. Yeah.
Justice! Justice was used also many times in this book.
The dialogue is one of the things that killed it for me. I mean, they just did that too much. They just did that, oh, justice!
It's a problem I believe that Robinson has is the fact that he is good writer.
Sometimes.
I think the fact that the main fact why this story actually sucks may have also been for the fact that he has so many other books on his plate also. So he's doing Superman. He was doing,
I liked Mon-El.
I like the Mon-El storylines, and it was actually good.
But it starts out good, and then it gets really... It's welcome, yeah.
I believe he can't juggle most storylines. I mean, he pretty much, starts making, you know, slips here and there. Like, you know, one story lacks because most of his attention is on something else. And one story starts off, may start off strong, it might dwindle to nothingness at the end. And, you know, Crime for Justice, when we first heard about it, was an interesting idea. But then when you actually read the first couple of pages and realize what's actually going on, it makes you go, what the hell, why is this even a story?
Yeah, and the premise changes so completely differently from the, I mean, even the idea that he's like, oh, the story took on its own life, so that's why it looked like it was going to feature Batgirl, because she was on, Batwoman, because she was on a bunch of the covers, but she was only in a second because the story took on its own life. I'm like,
well, he decided that he hadn't at that point seen much of her writing from Greg Rucka, so he didn't want to misuse the character and make her look bad, which I respect.
He misused all the other characters involved? Yeah. He's like,
at least you see a Batwoman.
He was like, I was fucking up enough with everybody else that I didn't want to make this any worse than it had to be.
I just put off Greg Rucka.
I mean, honestly, that's my mega, especially if we're talking about a Green Lantern podcast, and I've obviously ripped on Hal and his character before, and I don't think Hal's he's a character, a very specific kind of character, very interesting character, but at this point, especially after Cry for Justice, he seems to have every single possible quality of a terrible human being. I mean, I'm not even going to get into the fact that in Cry for Justice they try to make Huntress a floozy again by implying that Hal had a three-way with her and whatever. Not for nothing, not to say that – I'm not saying that everybody – you know, everybody's bisexual. That's really interesting. But why would Huntress, who's a devout, you know, Catholic – I don't know. It just seems like she'd kind of blanch at the idea of having a three-way and stuff, but whatever.
You know, Catholic preachers supposed to be, you know – holy, not touching.
She has a free idea about sex. She's really slept with less people than anybody, any other woman in the DC universe.
And she also slept with less people than Nightwing has.
And now she's in the backup with the female question. They're trying
There's some kind of weird tension there, and I don't think there's any sexual tension. I think there's a sense that there's going to be a point in the story where Helen is going to realize that Question's gay, and it's going to be kind of like a thing. I think there's a tension where Question is like, I'm going to make my move, and she's kind of like, oh, I actually don't realize you're trying to make a move because I don't think of it like that. So why would she have gotten into bed with Lady Blackhawk? So I'm just going to pretend that conversation didn't imply what I think it was.
I assume lots of alcohol was involved.
But,
it didn't happen.
So at this point, I don't necessarily mind that Hal sleeps around, even though he doesn't because he's had the same girlfriend for 4 or 5 years, and that's Cowgirl. I don't necessarily mind that at all. I mean, that's kind of like part of his character, whatever. He's obviously sassy and a playboy or whatever. But he does have every writers that aren't Geoff Johns write him as a guy who has, you know, at this point, he's such a womanizer that he has no respect for women. He tortures people. he tried to murder a bunch of people. I mean, he's obviously a terrible, terrible person, you know, and I want to like him, but it's like trying to read Civil War when they were doing Iron Man comics. Iron Man seemed like such a great guy in his own comic, but then, you know, he'd be strangling a puppy in the New Warriors tie-in. You're like, what? You know, so, I don't know. Overall, I think Hal's character was kind of, like, manhandled in this. Plus, you know, Green Arrow kicks his ass pretty solidly at one point, so good for Green Arrow.
We could assume during Final Crisis that when he was charging up his battery, like 1% of parallax went inside of him.
That's just an excuse.
I wish it was that easy to explain, but yeah.
Well, moving from those, you know, that topic of the abysmal Cry for Justice storyline. Huh?
Thumbs down.
Thumbs down to that book. Thumbs down.
Crying for justice.
We are crying for certain
justice.
Crying about
justice. Cry for justice, yeah.
Well, whatever. Let's say we move to the representation of Alan Scott in Justice Society of America. That's what we're bringing up, Justice Society. As the general, the statesman, Green Lantern, the guy who's been around since the 1940s. Basically, like his interpretation and how Justice Society has pretty much been sort of very capable to actually have a character.
Who?
Alan Scott.
No, who's capable?
The Justice Society book itself.
Oh.
Specific writer or just overall for this run?
The book.
I've come to the conclusion, personally, that the JSA is irrelevant. Everything they do is pointless to the greater DCU.
It's self-contained, I give it that.
Which I would agree, yeah, I appreciate that it's self-contained. You're right. Where the hell is Sandman, is my question, but yes.
I guess if you're a fan of these characters, then you would appreciate that they're self-contained.
I think mathematically speaking, you have to be a fan of at least one of those characters because there's 700 characters in that book.
Which is true because I love Jay Garrick.
Score one.
Dirty Flasher.
Personally, I think as a team, the JSA should be for the most part, killed off and disbanded. Like, I'm okay with there not being a Golden Age Flash running around because he's old. Like, there's no logical reason why he should be running around.
Oh, you totally don't want to get rid of
as a character, but as a hero.
I'm sorry, you want him around.
I know you have your own opinions, but, you know, fuck you. But the point being, I don't want to get rid of these old characters. I'm just getting to see them for the first time in the past few years. I want to see more of them.
You know, you can buy the archive thing that DC produces. You can.
Am I gonna spend $50 for like five issues?
You spend $15 for three issues. I mean, really, I don't have any sympathy for that kind of thing. I mean, at this point, how many more stories can you tell with Jay Garrick? How many more stories? I think it especially because JSA, when it started, was supposed to be a legacy series, and now it's not. Now it's like going to a family reunion every single fucking month, you know? I mean, there's hundreds of people, and everybody, let's make some stew together. It's like, really, are we making fucking stew again, Grandma? You know, it's like, stop, you know, stop.
Heck, you could just turn the book into three co-features between Jay Garrick, Alan Scott, and Ted Grant. Let them have their own solo adventures as old men.
Yeah, you know, put the, what's it called, the JSA Hospice Edition, and just have them all hang out in the on their deathbeds, like, leaving me the fuck alone, you know, letting Sandman show up for once, you know? Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that.
Sandman is really underutilized in that book. I grant that.
He came back.
I know, and I know the argument is that the characters are more well-known and more popular, and if you have a Flash and a Green Lantern, it's going to sell the book. I get that, but it's just, again, you're dragging your feet. Just let them go. They're actually 70 in the context of the series, you know, and it's getting harder to kind of, like, let it. I mean, DC's done it before. They write them out of the continuity every once in a while, but then they just bring them back because some writer, no offense, Mew, is like Mew and is like, I miss them. Let's do some more stuff with them. And then they just stick them in with 70 other people. So it's pointless.
To be honest, I can agree with the fact that, you know, when the book actually started gaining more characters, as a story idea, it was good. But then having it on paper and actually coming out week after week, it actually starts to weighing on you. Especially the fact that I really, really don't want to see Magog anymore at all. My gosh, his character is worthless in the greater DC universe. I totally do not want to see him ever again.
My problem with Magog is, yeah, he was written as a parody, sort of satire, sort of
of everything that is at the anti-hero, the character that Marvel had pinned up as their pinup boy.
Yeah, as Cable,
Cable of the DC universe.
Yeah, and who Bucky is now and stuff, and he's here. DC's just like, yeah, let's take advantage of that archetype that we were mocking.
It was a great idea during Kingdom Come because you know what, it made people think of, you know what is a hero. Is it the man who will go out of his way to kill someone, or the man who goes out of his way to save someone? So, and then to see Magog even get his own series had me in the DC Comics made me go, I'm losing touch with what's going on here.
You know, I liked when they used Alan Scott in Checkmate. I think that was cool. They should. I mean, obviously that series didn't do that well, so they got rid of it. But that I like that a lot. I think they should maybe just take Alan Scott, put him in GL. You know,
see the main reason why I enjoy Alan Scott's character is because in many ways I believe him to be the statesman of the DC universe. He's the guy that pretty much he's the wise and veteran of mostly
Captain America. Yeah.
He's the Captain America of the DC universe. He's the one who everyone will look for moral support, for a guidance, advice, and the guy who actually knows what he's doing at the time. Hmm. So when I saw him in bringing up, you know, those little miniseries during Infinite Crisis or World War III, him leading the charge was perfect for me.
In Final Crisis as well, when he recruits everybody.
Yeah, it was. His character has become such a mark in the DC universe during the time that I wanted to see more of him. And again, that's what Justice Society of America actually does a good job of his character. He is the leader of the Justice Society.
Well, as Mew, as somebody who, I mean, obviously is interested in the series, and this is, like, obviously something you feel passionate about, what do you enjoy that there's so many members? I mean, that they split the team into... You were saying yourself that you thought it was good that they split the team into two. The reason I thought that was,
I like a lot of the characters, but with the team being so large, you've only got 22 pages a month and you got more than 22 characters. Yeah. They needed to split the thing so people could actually get FaceTime.
Yeah, well, I know JSA has had at multiple points in its history since it's been revamped, it's had more than one series running. Like, they used to have All-Stars and you know, so... And then they had that JSA versus Cobra, and now they have permanently two different series, right?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, who's, I mean, out of the both of the series, which of the two would you prefer?
Well, mainly the main one, because, like I said, I want to read about the Golden Age Green Lantern and Flash and Wildcat and all that. The thing is, I gained connections to those guys more than I did the new guys, who most of which moved over to the new title.
Yeah. You know, my problem with it is the legacy stuff is that characters like Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman have been around for such a long time, just as long as all these other – I mean, longer than all these other Golden Age characters like Alan Scott and Jay Garrick. And for the sake of continuity, you know, we're supposed to accept that Alan Scott's been around longer than Batman, even though he has – I mean, you know, even though, you know, he hasn't necessarily, you know. And it affects the continuity, too, because you have so many stories of characters saying how great Batman is, how great Wonder Woman is, how great Superman is. And everybody says that, wow, Superman's like the guy we all look up to. And it's like, well, if Alan Scott's been active in the superhero world for 50 years, why isn't he the guy you look up to? Why is Superman the guy, you know?
Well, so because I think the government tried to accuse them of being communists.
Yeah, but that was, like, so long ago. And he's been fighting crime for, like, decades since then, you know? I think it, and especially with the way continuity works now, how are you even sure that that's what was going on?
Well, those people died off. Alan is dead now.
They're over it now. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. It feels like to me that it's kind of wonking with the way things are done, that they just kind of got rid of the other generation and let them retire and peacefully go out to pasture.
The older generation did disappear for many decades before they came back.
You know, maybe I'm bitter. Sorry, guys.
For what I assume, I don't think the JSA came back until after, like, Superman and Batman came in as heroes.
It depends on where you're reading, but yeah, after Zero Hour, I know up until Zero Hour, a lot of them were retired, and then because of Zero Hour, I think they de-aged a lot of them and got rid of half of them, and then that's when Alan Scott became Sentinel, and that's why he's relatively robust. What's Jay's excuse? The Speed Force?
Speed Force keeps him young, apparently.
And 10 Grant has 9 lives? Or I think that's a Grant Morrison thing.
Yeah. It was a JSA storyline, yeah.
Well,
originally,
Grant Morrison, I think, was supposed to say
it. Originally, they thought he lost all of his lives, but then it turns out you have to kill him 9 times consecutively to kill him.
Okay, that's adorable, but
that's pretty good.
That's clearly adorable, like, as Eric said.
That's adorable. I mean, it's a little unfollowable, but it's adorable.
The newest issue with the Nazi future, where everyone's captured. Apparently, they had to have him. They had to execute him 9 times in a row. Each time, he laughed about how pathetic their attempts were.
Of course, yeah.
They're mocking his shots.
That's cool. I like the idea that he just had 9 lines. But I guess, the character's been around for, 100 years, so they had to write something else for him to do besides just be the boxer guy. You know?
So, for those of you who've been reading since the series started over with Robinson, Goyer, and Johns, Has it been good? Has Alan been interesting? Because as someone who's just been reading the tail end of John's story and the Bill Willingham issues, it's not amazing.
I don't like Willingham as a writer. I'm sorry.
In general or just on JSA?
You know, in general. I don't like him as a writer.
You didn't like Fables?
I think he's not a bad idea, man. I think he's a poor writer. I think I agree with Frank. He writes too much. He has character. Nobody has conversations. There's a lot of exposition.
Yes.
So much exposition in every one of his stories. That's my thing.
I agree with you. That's the main reason why I dislike him. It's so too many people actually explaining what the hell they're supposed to be saying, or you know, in general meaning. Especially when I was reading the new Justice Society Nazi issue, I was like, man, I really don't need you to explain in pure detail what you're feeling at the moment.
Yeah,
I couldn't stomach most of that, especially most of his work during what was that ill-fated team he had?
Shadow Pact.
The Shadow Pact.
I liked Shadow Pact during leading up to Infinite Crisis.
Right.
But I admit that it was poorly written. I just liked it because, again, the idea of it being a team of diverse characters.
Yes.
You can get away with murder on a team book, and it was good. But then I couldn't read the proper series after the second issue. I gave up on it.
And I read for a lot longer than you did, just because I kept trying to give that book a chance. And I really didn't like his Robin run most of the time when he was on Robin.
I didn't mind his Robin run.
Are we not going to talk about the fact that Alan Scott was killed by a box exploding?
Yeah, I'm not up to date. Frankie explained it to me today. I'm not up to date on JSA. I didn't realize that he's quote unquote dead.
He was quote unquote dead in some weird paradox future that more likely will never occur after the end of that series.
Does anybody realize that Alan Scott just died? Half, like 95% of the people on our website don't know, don't care. 95% of people reading DC Comics don't know, don't care. Like, yeah. this thing is
Wait,
extremely...
95% of people is only like 100,000 people, so what is it?
No, but in all fairness, I mean, he probably isn't really dead, but if he is dead, then I didn't even hear about it until Frank said it to me tonight.
Exactly.
Didn't he die? And I was like, did he?
But again, he died in a offhand way of a story that pretty much explains to you in the beginning of it, this is not going to happen. This is not going to stay put. This is going to be erased right after the story arc is finished.
It's easy to forget that his weakness is wood.
Whatever. Anyway, to move on from this, because we're crunching time here, let's move on to Brave and the Bold, and the original story that it had, the original arc that had Green Lantern in it was what was it called again? Fates.
Green and the Gold.
No, the Green and the Gold was a recent storyline with him and with Dr. Fate, and his portrayal in that issue was, I'm not sure how to say, someone else fill in on that one.
I want to say that I think Mark Waid should be writing Green Lantern if Hal's going to stay on the title. He likes to write the character. He writes the character pretty well. He doesn't write the character as always being a great guy. I don't necessarily like the idea that he had to convince him he's underage, and that's why he shouldn't be hating on her. But I liked obviously when he was written Brave and Bold. I think he did kind of push him a bit, you know, he kind of like put him over on Batman a few times, and that's cool. And I think he had him write him with a specific personality, and that's cool. And he didn't forget how old he was, because I feel like a lot of writers like Jones forget that Hal is like, you know, 40. Like, even brought back, he's still 40. So he should talk like he's 40, he should act like he's 40. One question I do want to ask, and this might seem like fanboy nitpicking, would Hal actually be successful at gambling, considering he just kind of says hit all the time?
He clearly would not be successful at gambling. Apparently he has amazing luck,
yes,
which is incredibly stupid.
Well, I think poker, yes, I believe in poker, Hal wouldn't be able to bluff either, right? Cause he's
that wasn't tall. Poker, that was blackjack he was playing.
Yeah, but it was blackjack, exactly. It's like, it's hit or miss, and he just said hit, and he won every time. That's kind of just like...
In poker, yeah, you're right, he would actually win in poker, mainly because he's a...
He's fearless for keep...
I guess.
you could blame it on the Book of Destiny that they had to deal with.
The Book of Destiny made Hal better at blackjack?
You know what, I think... And
he was destined to win.
And it's funny because not to be like this kind of guy, but even if you read the first Brave and the Bold storyline, the first issue, Hal uses the ring in ways that, you know, he hasn't really used the ring since like the third, like volume three when Gerard Jones is writing it, when he used to do crazy stuff. I mean, he says like he's getting hit with a neural wave that's making him lose his willpower. So he tells the ring, replicate that and do it, which is something that like, shit, can the ring do that? Because the ring can do anything, and why not? And later in the storyline, he uses the Zeta Beam to travel to pull Batman out of time, and that's absurd. Like, but again, why can't the ring do that? Because
wait. If he can pull Batman out of time,
well, using his Zeta Beam. So
using his Zeta Beam.
Yeah, why does he just do it now? Yeah, why does he just do it?
Yeah, he clearly has to be irradiated with Zeta Beam particles. He should be able to be pulled out of time if Batman believed, if Green Arrow believed, Green Lantern, damn it, Green Lantern believed he was still alive.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, oh, wait, he's back there? I can go get him. There you go. There's your Batman.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess you can get him now. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's funny, too, at the beginning of the storyline, Cal's a cop, and the idea where he's supposed to be a space cop, or at least that's what some writers tell us, but as soon as he sees a dead body, he's like, I have no idea what to do. I'm going to ask someone to help. Like, he just immediately...
Well, that's a cop for you right there. He's going to go ask his forensic guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, again, I want to reiterate that it's kind of gross that he'd keep reminding himself that Supergirl was 17, you know? And that the story kind of played on the fact that she was, like, adorable by having the part where she's in a miniskirt fighting monsters and stuff. I can't really
and
get
she was
behind
also
that.
Flirting with him.
Yeah, well, you know. Yeah. Yeah. Well, she's a young girl. She's going to flirt with the guy that we're told has apparently pheromones that can attract anything, including, you know, a devout Catholic into having lesbian sex with a friend of hers. Yeah.
Yeah. Good times.
Whatever, but it's cool. Whatever,
but
I think. And
the thing is, isn't the age of consent in many states at least 17?
No, it doesn't matter. It's still grinding.
It's only a few states that are 18 only.
But still, it's just still yucky.
Yes,
yucky is probably the word. I think it's also interesting too because you see how, at least in the issue with Supergirl, you see him doing some what's it called? Work here as a Green Lantern. Like, he is a Green Lantern. I mean, he goes undercover because he's like, oh, I don't want to fill out this stuff. I mean, he actually tries to solve a crime as opposed to. You know, we've seen him doing Green Lantern shit. I haven't seen that guy do Green Lantern shit in, like, a really long-ass time.
Yeah, I haven't seen him do actual space cop Enos since possibly the last one when he handed off those gremlins to the other two sector Green Lanterns from another sector that spoke German.
Yeah.
He's been kind of busy, you know, dealing with, like, family issues.
Crossover after crossover.
Sometimes sleeping with Cowgirl. Yeah, I could totally see how full his plate has been.
Again, does anybody know Cowgirl's real name? Because I don't remember.
Does
anybody know if this series is even in continuity?
Possibly not.
I don't count it.
It's pretty major. It's set up what happened to the Book of Destiny.
Well, since when has we seen the Book of Destiny again?
They mentioned Final Crisis in this series, or like they prelude to it, though again, that doesn't necessarily mean anything. I think it's supposed to be in continuity. It could always be written out. There's no reason to assume it couldn't be, but... there's nothing in at least the first storyline, and I know the first storyline leads into the next few storylines. There's nothing in them that are necessarily not in continuity.
I think initially it was in continuity, and then they took the team-up concept to the point where it can't fit.
They basically took the concept of Superman and Batman. Clearly, the stories are occurring, but you can't for the life of you place it anywhere in their current timeline. Right.
Yeah, but whether you like it or not, they're in continuity because, you know, Lex Luthor is no longer the president, you know, and blah, 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 stuff happens in Superman and Batman that we have to kind of acknowledge is happening in the DC universe, unfortunately. So, I don't know. I can't think of anything offhand that happens. I mean, obviously, people are running around doing stuff when they're in the middle of their own storylines, but that's kind of what we want. We want these characters to be so separate. We don't want to, you know, have, like, you know, I mean, I don't know. The only person I ever saw balance the continual changes of characters in a team-up book is Grant Morrison when he did the JLA book, where every other issue Superman was Electric or Wonder Woman was Hippolyta, and, you know, Our Man was a fucking robot, and Connor was on the team.
Robot.
Yeah, he made a point to write every storyline, and he made a point to feature the fact that, like, all right, Hippolyta's Wonder Woman, well, I'm going to do a story that's going to talk about World War II and feature the JSA. Take that, motherfucker. Oh, Superman is Electric, well, I'm going to write a storyline where only his electric powers can save the day. Like, as opposed to, I don't mind that this is removed from, I don't want to say removed from continuity, possibly removed from immediate continuity. Yeah, I'll say that.
Well, how did we think of the Brave and the Bold as a whole?
I liked it. I think, you know, George Perez is one of those guys that I think he draws too busy, but for the sake of clarity, but I think his art's really cool looking, so it's hard to fault the guy anything. And I think the story's a little too abrupt the way it ended, but obviously leads into other stories, and I liked the way all the characters were presented, more or less. And it was pretty cool. I want to see Mark Waid write Green Lantern more specifically.
That's not going to happen, sadly.
Well, no, yeah, I guess not, but still.
Why put so, the best... we're determining that Superman Batman's in continuity?
Superman Batman you is, are.
is clearly has a continuity, but it can't technically be tied into any other, any current continuity of Superman in general or Batman in general. Well,
they tried to solve that issue with what they did, where now every single storyline has been, every single issue, I think, for the last couple months or for the next foreseeable future is going to be storylines to take place around...
In the past.
In the past, you said?
Yeah, like after our Wars at War and this and that.
Yeah, the Wars at War is the current Superman Batman story. But aside from that, getting away from the point, Wes, what did you think of the entire Brave and the Bold?
I never read Wade's Brave and the Bold, so all I have to go off of is the Dr. Fate stuff. And that was decent, you know, forgettable. Like, I don't even like picking up Brave and the Bold because it's so far from out of my mind. I like things that I know is in continuity. That's, like, a big point for me. So, I'm already against the monthly title, so putting Green Lantern in it is not going to make me going to run out to the store and buy it. So, I have no opinion on it.
All right.
Well, I think, is it more pertinent for us to have comics that are currently following exactly what's going on or featuring their characters and are interesting?
For the people coming into comics, they say, oh, well, you want a Batman story, here you go. Here's Batman and Superman. If you want a Aquaman story, here's JMS writing Aquaman featuring Etrigan. Like, I think it serves a purpose, but for those people who like to be bogged down by continuity, who are enthralled with what's going on a month-to-month basis, the Brave and the Bold is a secondary comic, and it's like an escape from all that. And it serves a purpose, but it's just not for me.
All right. Mew?
I like the comic. I mean, I kind of miss Mark Waid on it because I liked how he kind of strung these different team-ups together in these different arcs, not just like this team-up works together for this amount of time. It's a sort of character show up in different ways, and I like that. Not to say I don't like what they're doing right now, I do, but it's just something different, and I'm giving a JMS a chance to spread his wings in the title and see what he wants to do with it.
All right. Again, I clearly loved Mark Waid, especially during his Legion run, as I said many times before.
Holler.
But I clearly like the original story for the Brave and the Bold. I still remember it to this day. Yeah, because how it actually did work. He did actually space cop work. So I like the representation of Green Lantern had been done during the book. JMS did that Green and the Gold issue, right? If I'm right.
Who did
the Green and Gold?
Was it David Hein?
I believe that's who it was. Hold on.
David Hein did do a few Green Lantern issues towards the end that I had read, but I'm not up to date on that series.
That was JMS. Excuse me.
Well, I had a feeling it was JMS, especially the way it was written. And to be honest, it's a one shot, so I can't really judge most of the character development for Green Lantern and Hal Jordan. That issue was a bit touch and go there. I mean, his character was representative in a way a bit correctly. I'm not sure if it even was, only for the fact that he was taken down so easily. So you know what? Brave and the Bold is a good medium for Green Lantern to be in. I would like to see more of him in the actual book. So I'm waiting for that. Waiting to see what more can be done with him in a book that's pretty much non-canonical in a way. Moving on from all of that stuff to Wednesday Comics. I didn't read any of this. I'm sorry. I'm gonna start with saying this right now. I only read possibly the first issue, the first page of that 12 page issue of Wednesday Comics. It's 12 pages, right?
Yeah, I think Wednesday Comics is really cool because I think honestly most of the stuff in it wasn't very good.
No,
almost all the art was pretty good. Almost all the art was pretty good, but most of the writing was kind of hackish and really a waste. It was cool to see certain things, like I didn't necessarily love the Wonder Woman. I mean, I didn't love the Wonder Woman, but I thought it was pretty cool because Ben Cole ran out of his way to do something really interesting. And the Adam Strange stuff obviously was awesome. The Batman was pretty cool because it looked like he was really taking advantage of it. I can't say I loved the story in the Superman one, but the art was awesome. And down to the Green Lantern one, this was a clear example of, like, Kurt Busiek, who I already think is kind of a hack writer, who doesn't bother to come up with any ideas at all, let alone his own ideas, and just kind of recycles the same shit. There was nothing going on in the story that was remotely interesting. The art was awesome, though. I really liked the art. I think Joe Quiñones is the guy who did it, how you pronounce his name. Art was really cool. Like to see that guy doing more. But unfortunately, yeah, just really just not a very good story.
Yeah, I can agree with that. For the most part, most of those Wednesday Comics stories were borderline terrible. Yeah, I gotta agree fully that the art was good in most of the stories, excluding, like, Strange Adventures. That was just disgustingly terrible.
You don't like Paul Pope? I think Paul Pope's, like, one of the best guys ever, yeah.
They look like throw up. Yeah, Green Lantern, great art. I didn't hate the story. I thought he did a decent job with the cliffhangers every week. What my problem was that you went after that 60s feel with the art and the story, but there was no, like, real thing to tie you to the 60s or tie you to that time period that said, okay, yeah, there's space travel here and they're talking about the moon, but that's it. We get this one little nod to it. And, like, if you were going to go different from everybody else, you should have went all in. And I think it was like a idea he had and he didn't follow through at all. And
so you want to see more Buicks?
I want to see... That'll help, you know.
What's the point of it?
Yeah. What's the point of setting it in the 60s when you're gonna?
You know, you should be superficial about it. Yeah. I agree.
I think it worked. Wednesday Comics as a brand, it was definitely a great experiment. If I see it again this summer, I'll definitely pick them up. Hopefully the writers know what they're doing now, going back and reading it. I probably won't pick up that hardcover, but I'll definitely pick it up if they try it again. I like the idea of printed comics on paper like that. But
the size, yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely an experience. I just don't like the crappy stories.
Yeah, crap stories.
Yeah, to be honest, if they ever do attempt to make this again, having seen that basically it's a good medium for them to go into, the fact that it's 12 pages of an issue, they just have to promote themselves better, saying, you know what, we have to take it seriously, not just produce something of lesser extent just because it's lesser content.
I think they should
give you more for the fact that you're getting less pages. So they should.
Well, here's my deal: is I think they ended up going to artists. All the artists they got. Guys like Mike Allred, who's awesome, and Paul Pope, you know, whatever, totally off your mind, Wes. The Strange Adventures was, he's just one of the best guys working in comics, like, ever. And just, like, they got really artists that, like, normally wouldn't even be drawing this kind of stuff, drawing it, and they went out of their way to get these great artists, and it looks like they just kind of grabbed whatever writer was around, you know?
Yeah,
like,
they got Eddie Braganza writing Teen Titans.
Yeah.
And it seemed like they wanted to attach talent that was available, not so much talent that'll work. Like, Arcudi writing Superman,
I think he writes, BPRD is pretty good, and he used to write The Mask, and I like that, and that's all I really know from the guy, so I like that, but yeah. But Azzarello, I mean, it had Azzarello, I think the game in Metamorpho kind of sucked, but at least they went out of their way to be like, all right, let's get a fucking guy who can write really, please. But otherwise, I mean, friggin' Walt Simonson, didn't he write the Demon Catwoman? Like, who in the right? It's like nobody even cared. Like, they just, like, literally pulled names out of a hat. Like, Walt Simonson, Demon, Catwoman, Carl Kershaw. All right, cool, we got it. Don't worry about it, you know. I mean,
it's gold. It will be gold, and people will buy it.
Can't polish the turf. Well, Mew, what do you think?
I like the concept itself. I mean, some stories were more hit and miss than others. I mean, some worked and some didn't so much. But overall, I think they need to try the concept again, but maybe choose writers that maybe have a little bit more experience with the characters themselves. And because a lot of the things they were trying to do was like, what are your dream teams? Like, have you never worked on something before? Well, do you want to try it? I mean, I think you can get some good ideas out of that and, like, see some writers that might want to try good things, but then again, you also run the risk of they don't know how to write that character good at all.
Yeah, I think I would appreciate. I actually like the idea of getting these great guys and saying do whatever the fuck you want on anybody, whoever the fuck you want. But then again, you might be right because I think the best. I think the Paul Pope one was the best one out of all of them, but the best written one was probably the Batman one. And Azrael has written Batman before, and he's written very well, so I think it's kind of, yeah, maybe you're right. I don't know. I like the idea of them picking somebody and just saying, like, Neil Gaiman on Metamorpho with Mike Alward. I mean, I don't love Neil Gaiman, but that does sound awesome. Like, you know, and Cal Baker doing Hawkman because he wanted to. I'm like, yeah, that does sound awesome. It wasn't awesome, but it did sound awesome, you know.
Yeah, no, best lead plans.
I submit. Kurt Busiek seems like, again, Kurt Busiek, again, I feel like I rip on this guy every time I talk about him, but I always feel like I don't rip on this guy enough. I think he's a hack who needs to get out of comics. I never read a single thing that guy ever wrote that I liked. Please stop. I think this is the proof of it, because you read this and it's like, you really had the opportunity to do something interesting, and what he did was like, I'm going to do the things I like, which is Hal Jordan. And really, that's kind of an interesting story for me as someone who's kind of a Hal basher and a Green Lantern, you know. Not a Green Lantern apologist, you know, we'll go on a way to say, like, no, a lot of the franchises suck, and this is why. And he's the kind of guy who approves it, you know, he's the kind of guy that, the entrenched management that believes that Hal is so interesting because of this, and Hal is so interesting because of that. And then when they try to present Hal in this way, they think it's so interesting, and ends up being really boring and derivative and not interesting, you know. So I think that story specifically points to all things that are wrong with Hal. If reading Geoff Johns's comics for the last 4 years didn't tell you what was already wrong with Hal, that's like a little nice little capsize encapsulation of my problem with Hal, but yeah.
Hmm. Anyone else?
Just ending it here, I thought that they did have a mixture of nice people on there, like you said, with Gaiman and Azzarello. I think it wasn't so much that they were working on the wrong characters. I think it's so much that they might have been rushed because it's such a new format for them that they have to end every 6 panels on the cliffhanger, and that might be wrong for certain writers. I mean, Azzarello killed it on Batman. I thought Carl Kershaw did a fantastic job with Flash.
Yeah, that was you're right, absolutely right.
Flash is good. Flash.
That was probably the best written one out of all of them, which is so surprising because, you know, fucking Carl Kershaw, really, like, out of nowhere, but yes, absolutely, I agree with you.
Yeah, I think it was more so the format that might have hurt a lot of these stories that writers just couldn't get around the limited spacing. Yeah. So I'm not going to hate the writers or call them hacks. I mean, they very well could be hacks, but I'm willing to give each of them another chance because...
A fair fighting chance.
I don't think you should get guys like Dan DiDio or Kurt Busiek who are going to write one specific type of story that's so limiting and not interesting. I mean, even honestly, I didn't like the Supergirl story that much. I thought it wasn't as great as everybody thought it was. I did appreciate what they tried to do with it, and I would like to see those guys, even though I just ripped on Jimmy Palomino and Justin Gray earlier, I would love to see them do something else because they really did try to do something different. But get guys like Dan DiDio shouldn't write it. You know, fuck's sake, the guy edits it, you know, and like, Kurt Busiek shouldn't be doing it. Just guys that are interesting and really can do something like that because I think... Some guys went out of their way to do some shit. Even Dave Gibbons, I think he wrote the Kamandi one, right? Even his shit was great. I mean, he tried his thing and it worked out. So I think, you know, I don't want to excuse too much of the format because some guys really, really knocked it out of the park. I know the trade, I know they talked about they're going to show excerpts from stuff that they didn't produce and a lot of the creative process. And unfortunately, the trade obviously isn't going to be as big as the other regular issues, but I believe it is a bigger size, like it's 16 by something. So I'm kind of looking forward to that.
Well, again, we'll guess we'll leave it there. And thank you. Tune in once again for a splendiferous new GL Spotlight coming to you next week.
Yeah.
And also be sure to check out Kirby Crackle's new album, E for Everyone, featuring our theme song, Ring Capacity, now available on iTunes and Amazon via their website, KirbyCracklemusic.com.
Be sure to check out Kirby Crackle, the performers of our opening theme, Room Capacity, at www.kirbycracklemusic.com. Also, check out the Roy Kirk Method, performers of our ending theme, Sector 2814, at www.freewebs.com/Roy Clark Method.
Color green, it can do anything.
Sometimes it speaks to me and says, how? What have you done with your life? People around you keep dying.